Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this modern dystopia. It's episode number 179 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag discusses Sark's answer to the A&M question. At 12:30, Houston is dealing with some serious superstar drama in two different sports. And in mere minutes, Sark is officially introduced to Longhorn Nation. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
Ah, you damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Wednesday. We hit hump day before the divisional round of the NFL. Four more games in that regard. Longhorn basketball back out on the floor tonight. We've got state championship games coming up in high school football, including two area teams. But most importantly, Trey Elling has returned. Yesterday was the anniversary, yesterday was the birthday, and yesterday was the day he got to see Mr. Rogan, Mr. Chappelle, and some others on a comedy stage trying to find some normal. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Don't forget, it was my daughter's date of conception anniversary.
I don't say such things out loud. You can celebrate that all you want, but I'm not going to join you in that.
Is that going to scar her to know that in 10, 15 years?
Probably. I'm going to be like Tom McKay's daughter in the commercial, where there's just certain things you may talk about that I won't talk about.
That's fair.
Right. Tom McKay can tell everybody to do certain things. She did not want to do that. That's what I'm going to be.
It was a good day off yesterday, Chad. Spent a lot of time with Justine. We had a new place for lunch called the Chicken Salad Shop.
Okay.
Over on Burnett Road. They specialize in,
I would hope, chicken salad?
Tuna. No, chicken salad.
I love chicken salad. Was it good?
Insanely good cookies. Yeah, the chicken salad is awesome. And I'm not the biggest chicken salad fan, but it was excellent. They offer wraps, sandwiches, salads. Again, really good cookie selection. Highly recommend that place. And then for dinner, we ate at what I'm going to go ahead and call our favorite Italian spot in town at this point, although I love Patrizzi's. Juniper is one of those places that we will now go for special occasions.
That's the place you took me to.
Juniper, yeah. It's where we went with Charles O.
That's right.
Best cacio e pepe in town. Do a lot of other really nice things, too. And their plating is on par right now. They're doing a phenomenal job with their plating. You're laughing, but being serious.
No, it's just a great snobby way to say it. The plating. The way they're plating right now.
I can appreciate that aesthetic when it's done really well. And they're not only cooking excellent food, the plating is on point. But we had to find some place that was close to Stubbs to eat early because you have to go through the testing process, you and your group.
Oh, that's right.
Before going into the show last night at Stubbs. It's all very well organized, very professionally done. They do a great job of communicating things with you throughout the process. Literally took, 15 or 20 minutes. Then we were shown to our table. We got to sit for the show, and the show was hilarious. Obviously, Rogan and Chappelle are going to be really good, but yeah. It was like this superstar lineup of openers, too.
Yeah, I'm excited for some of these other names you got to see.
So the MC was Donnell Rawlings, who is Ashy Larry on Chappelle's show. Well, you want to talk about somebody who cusses up a storm. That guy makes me blush with how much he cusses.
And all right.
You know me away from the microphone. You know I'm not opposed to the occasional F-bomb. But he introduced Michelle Wolf first.
Oh, I like Michelle.
Mo Ammer was a part of the bill. A guy that BK and I spoke with on the previous midday show a couple of times. Ron White did 20 minutes.
Dude, I'm a little extra jealous for that, too. I dig Ron White. That's cool.
He was very funny. And then, as big a fan of Chappelle as I am, honestly, I feel like Rogan's 45 minutes to an hour is a little bit tighter right now. Mm. So Rogan impressed me the most, but Chappelle is also Chappelle. So he's not only making you laugh with the comedy. He's also got a lot of poignant things that he just wants to say in general. And he's very frustrated with the state of things in this country right now, especially after the U.S. Capitol fiasco last week.
Sure. Well, I'm excited you got to go. I'm glad y'all had a good time. You survived it weather-wise. I'm guessing by the end of the show, by the end of the Chappelle set, it is getting downright cold out there.
So when Chappelle was done, I couldn't feel my toes anymore.
Oof.
And Rogan actually came back out on stage with Chappelle for a few minutes, and they were just kind of rapping back and forth or whatever. I told the rest of the table, because Justine and I were giving Kevin Dunn from the Triple Option, and then also my buddy Mark, rides home after that. I'm like, look, I'll come pick you guys up out front. I can't do this anymore. Like, I prepared myself in every other avenue, even brought a hat, brought gloves, didn't use them because you're honestly better off if you have decent pockets, just putting your hands in your pockets, because the fingers provide the skin-on-skin contact that keeps them a little bit warmer versus them being isolated in glove form.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not account for my feet. I thought the boots that I were wearing would be insulated enough, but they were not. And so by the time Chappelle was done, I was ready to go.
So let's make sure we're keeping the head and feet warm out there, but just keep those things in mind as we're trying to get back to some shows and some concerts. Be on the lookout for stuff like that. That's a hell of a show to come to town.
I did have the scarf on, and I don't wear the scarf very often in Austin.
Oh, the scarf
either.
Is good.
Yeah, because once the heat escapes through the neck area, you are royally screwed.
I found out just a couple years ago that the scarf is not just it's not just a fashion statement. Those things actually work, and I just wear a beat-up jacket that I've been wearing for so many years. It doesn't do as good a job probably as it should, so I'll do that thin jacket. But with the scarf, when it gets down into these temperatures, because that helps the neck, and usually that way I don't need a super heavy coat.
Yeah, you can get away with a lighter jacket if you have the scarf, and depending on just how frigid it is, if you have something covering up your head and ears, too.
So good to have you back, sir. Glad you had a good time at the comedy show. We will have our normal Wednesday conversation with Justin Wells of Inside Texas coming up at 1. That is apropos for a couple things. But, Trey, let's get your thoughts on a couple things, because while you were gone yesterday, your new head football coach put on your colors for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's no longer digital stuff. They didn't have to mock it up, right?
Yeah.
He had the logo behind him. He rocked the colors. He flashed that first official hook 'em horns, if you will. What did you think of Steve Sarkisian yesterday in the opening press conference?
I thought in a lot of ways it was pretty standard for that introductory press conference. A lot of cliches being thrown out there. As Scipio Tex pointed out on Inside Texas, I think he technically released the article yesterday afternoon. We need to make sure that we are buttoning up recruiting in the state, getting good relationships with the Texas high school coaches going. Those things are very important. This being one of the top jobs in college football, which I truly believe to be the case, but that's something that all of these guys will come in and say.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that struck me more than anything else, Chad, more than any one thing that he said, is an appreciation for his tone. He had the sound of a guy, and gosh, this is a little bit judging a book by its cover, and I'm certainly not saying this is the end all here, but he sounded like a guy who belonged at the University of Texas as its head coach. He sounded, I think, professional in a way that the previous guy was maybe lacking, especially once we really got the ball rolling with this and we saw some of the antics playing out in pregame or on the field during the course of games, but especially losses.
So the thing that I kept comparing it to in my head yesterday was a pro day for a quarterback. If you set up the right day, the right pro day for a quarterback, and he's got, especially if he's got badass receivers that he just finished throwing to, he should look great.
Mm-hmm.
The ball should rarely hit the ground, if at all. You give him one or two, but generally he should look good. I thought yesterday was a pro day for a quarterback where he's got badass receivers, and to be able to walk into that press conference carrying the 52-24 that everybody had just seen, that is rare. It is rare to have that. You just called plays for a national championship win of that degree, setting records and all of that. So I didn't think there were many ways he could lose yesterday. Everybody always talks about it's easy to win that first press conference. Generally, it is. I thought he had everything set up to go win it. Thought he did a good job. I agree with you. I thought there was a head coach tone to him, and he didn't really get anything. Nothing seemed to throw him off. It's an easy press conference because there's no games to look at, like games in terms of Texas.
Right.
But the one game to look at, again, is that. The one game you could reference is, my God, Coach, you just whipped Ohio State by 4 touchdowns.
Exactly.
Tell us more about it. Tell the Texas players how you could do that with them. So I thought it all fit together well, and I thought he sounded like the Texas head coach. I think that's a good way to say it.
Now, he doesn't get in trouble for vaguely referencing landing a commitment yesterday, right?
I don't think so. Great question. I believe the rule states he can't say the kid's name.
Okay.
Now, the question that pops up after he said that, because he did mention, landing a recruit in state. We'll talk about that guy in a second, get your thoughts on that. But what I wondered after that was, well, wait a second. Could then a media member have said, well, Coach, obviously you can't say his name. Can you tell us anything about him? Could he have said something?
No.
Because I don't think so.
I think when you start going down that road of details, that's when it gets into really choppy waters.
So I don't think he has an issue there. But coming up at 1, we'll ask Justin Wells just how much of a big deal this was. A great name, Armani Winfield from Louisville, a receiver. And Trey, he's like an inch taller than Devontae Smith. Devontae, everybody needs to memorize in your head that Devontae Smith is 6'1". What you just saw is 6'1".
Yeah.
Joshua Moore, 6'1", is how he's listed. Joshua Moore is listed within 10 pounds of Devontae Smith, and he's the same height. So this kid is 6'2". And apparently has a great relationship with Andre Coleman, who apparently is going to stay at wide receivers coach, and then said that, Monday night was fun to watch because Sarkisian certainly, gets his guys, involved. Yeah. And that's kind of the next transition, Trey. When I talked about it yesterday, I talked about the press conference itself, I talked about the game itself, the national championship game itself, and then we tied it back into, okay, Texas fans, what could you see with Sarkisian? So for you, we'll kind of reverse it because you got to see the press conference, which obviously I hadn't seen yesterday when we were doing the show, but the press conference is one thing, but now back up for me and tell me what you were feeling Monday night as 52-24 was being laid down.
Oh, it looks so pretty. I love all the misdirection going on over the course of even simple plays at times, but also his insistence on utilizing his best weapons to the max. How many balls did Devontae Smith have thrown to him in the first half?
He caught 12.
I think it was like 13 or 14. Yeah. I think it was one or two over what the number of catches were for 200 yards. And I realized that was a special performance, but that speaks to his desire to get the ball in the hands of his best players. And that's been a major issue here at Texas for a long time now, but specifically over the last couple of years. When you had an offensive-minded guy controlling everything on the sidelines, and like with Bijan Robinson over the last couple months of the season, it was clear that he needed more work. He wanted more work. He was hungry for that, but you're saving him for some hypothetical situation that's never going to happen, or you're trying to preserve his legs or whatever else. Like, I understand that to a very small degree, but when everything's on the line, you get your best players the football in terms of skill position players. You put your best players in position to succeed, to make those plays for you. And Sark is not afraid to do that.
Bijan Robinson, of course, had 12 touches in the bowl game, and Najee Harris had 11 in the first half Monday night, and 29 for the game.
Yeah.
And he was utilized in all kinds of ways, Trey. He wasn't even the star of the game. You couldn't even argue that he was the star. However, when you end up with 22 carries and 2 touchdowns on the ground and 7 catches and a touchdown as a receiver, again, I wouldn't call him the star of the game. Devontae Smith needed to be the star of the game and the MVP and everything, but they certainly never forgot about 22. So if I was Bijan Robinson, and by the way, Bijan was one of the guys on Twitter reacting positively to it, why wouldn't he?
Right.
That is a message to Bijan Robinson. Yo, 5, we are going to let you play football and not just watch it. You will participate a lot.
Yeah, I'm desperate for even 20 touches for him in a game, much less 29. That's great. And I thought the route designs were all really good. Obviously, he's developed Mac Jones, and we look forward to seeing more of that in the quarterback room here going forward, too.
Mac's a great story.
I think the future is bright here at Texas with Sarkisian. I realize that I'm drinking burnt orange Kool-Aid right now because the hire just happened, but I truly believe. I have less doubts right now than I did when Texas brought Tom Herman in.
I think that's fair. Yeah, because I think what's unfair in this discussion is there are a few fans out there I've seen that are trying to mirror image these last two hires, and I just don't think it's a mirror image. Yeah. I think there's definitely more there's more substantial stuff to talk about. I'm not saying a win against Florida State isn't something to talk about. I'm not saying beating Oklahoma that day is not something to talk about, and I'm not saying a national championship with Ohio State is something to talk about. But right now, considering where football is, where offensive football is, and I said this yesterday, Trey, your problem right now as a Texas football fan, everybody knows what it is. It's OU. That's the problem. You have to figure out a way to outthink Lincoln Riley or at least match him in football thinking. And Monday night should have at least given you the message that if you walk off the field in Dallas losing, at least you feel like you may have lost a man's game at that point.
Mm-hmm.
If Sark just can't out-duel Lincoln on that day because of talent and whatever, but you still feel like you did everything you could, and if you walk out of there losing one of the classic, you know, 45, 42 games, all right. But if you walk out of there thinking, wait a minute, our running back didn't play for half the third quarter? What are we doing? What are we talking about? And guys don't seem to be developing as we go into the OU game. That's going to be a problem. So I think that's where, if you're a Texas fan, I think that's where you got to feel good. You feel like you're at least headed into that discussion a little better equipped right now.
I'm just tired of watching Texas games, and this is with the two previous staffs now, and losing games essentially because the head coach on the sideline, his side of the football, being incapable of doing their damn job. It happened with Charlie in the defense his last couple of years here, where that last year they were literally setting records in terms of how poorly they were playing. And then for Tom Herman, the entire time, but especially these last couple of years, it seemed to be the offense that was essing the bed more than the defense, especially in the second half of 2020.
Well, and that's the other bottom line. We've said this over and over again. The thing you can't have happen for the third straight time is you can't have the head coach's side of the ball fail you.
True.
It doesn't. Monday night feels like that may not. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect. It's not going to be 52 points every game.
No.
But it feels like that side of it should be tied up, buttoned up, as guests have said this week. He will call the plays. We're not going to hear the words collaborative effort anymore when it comes to offense. But Charlie Strong didn't give you enough on defense, X's and O's. Tom Herman didn't give you enough on offense, X's and O's. Steve Sarkisian has got to give you offensive X's and O's. He showed some of that off on Monday. Here's what it reminded me of NFL-wise. It reminded me of another guy we had talked about, Kyle Shanahan. Make the simplistic stuff look fancy.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be show. Sometimes you can show them fancy and give them basic. Sometimes you can show them basic and give them fancy, but keep them guessing. And a lot of times when you went back and looked at the play on Monday night, you're like, well, that's not the most complex play in the world, but they disguised it well. They scripted it well. It's just the way the play rolls out, you're like, oh, yeah, that's brilliant. That's well done.
Yeah, it all looked pretty, whether it was faking a screen pass and throwing it to the other side of the field for a 15, 20-yard gain or anything else that they did. The use of motion to see what is going on with the defense, but also getting the defense to lean a certain direction. I'm excited to see what this offense is going to look like, even in year one. It won't hit its full potential until at least year two, probably year three is most realistic. But I think the offense will be good enough next year that Texas will have a chance to win each and every game that they play.
So on the outside of football stuff, do you want to play the answer to the Eyes of Texas thing now? Do we have that?
Sure.
Doesn't take long. Steve Sarkisian was asked, of course, Tom Herman dealt with the Eyes of Texas issue. Some say that's part of why he's not the coach anymore. Steve Sarkisian was asked about the Eyes of Texas stuff yesterday, and here was the answer. Is this you expressing your feelings about Steve Sarkisian? Blue skies everywhere? Is that what it is?
No, this is musical desperation. Not coming up with anything better, seeing that somebody had recently played Electric Light Orchestra on our random music streaming service that we use to play songs here. So that's what we're rolling with today, Chad.
Yeah, ironically, it was. So John played Don't Let Me Down, Don't Bring Me Down yesterday. And Mr. Blue Sky is a song that we referenced the other day because
of Joe Cook.
He referenced a different song. I thought he meant that one at first when he said Blue Sky, but he was going with Blue Sky from the Allman Brothers as the one song he would listen to before leaving the earth. And that is your question of the week. We have that interview coming up before the end of the week. Is that right?
End of the week, yeah. Either tomorrow or Friday, probably on Friday. But feel free to share your answer and why you're picking that song at 337-3776. The interview is with the guy who wrote a book called One Last Song. And the book is based around that premise and asking more than 30 well-known musicians for their answers. So we'll talk about some of the answers, how he came up with the idea to begin with, and more. And that conversation was with Mike Ayers in a day or two.
That's going to be interesting stuff. Also, if you're into the high school football scene and those championship games, you know you got a couple area schools going for titles. Westlake will be taking on South Lake Carroll in the Dodge Bowl. Todd Dodge taking on his son who coaches South Lake Carroll. That is amazing stuff. Craig and Jeff had a chance to interview Coach Dodge today. Check that out on hornfm.com. Once everything is podcasted, you can go to the Horn app and check it out as well. Plus, earlier in the week, they interviewed Cedar Park head coach, Coach Absick, and they are going for a state title as well. All you need to remember is 7 o'clock, Friday, Saturday, 7 o'clock. If you want to watch the area teams, Cedar Park plays Friday at 7. The Westlake game is Saturday at 7. Both are on Fox Sports Southwest, and of the four games coming up, Craig Way is calling three of them. There is no better way to have a state championship game than having Craig Way call the game. So he won't call the elite, the game that involves Alito and the team that beat Liberty Hill. I believe that's the matchup there. And then, but the other three, Craig will be calling on Fox Sports Southwest. So check that out. Speaking of Craig and Light the Tower, his co-host Jeff Howe clarified for us on the recruit thing. Trey was asking about Steve Sarkisian vaguely mentioning the recruit win for Texas yesterday, getting a guy in the 2022 class, Armani Winfield. All he said was, sign a guy in state, basically, not sign, you know, recruit a guy in state or get a guy in a class that's in state. So I've clarified, Trey, technically, as long as he doesn't say the kid's name, you could even have a back and forth with a coach about a player. But he said no coach ever goes there because they could get reported for that. Somebody could take the conversation, report it to the UIL or NCAA or whoever needs to find out about it and say, look, it's obvious who they're talking about here.
Right.
So he stays away from that. But yesterday,
couldn't they say that about him just referencing getting a commitment too?
They could.
I mean, I trust Jeff, obviously, but that's was, that, I mean, it definitely gave me pause when I heard that part of the press conference this morning. I listened to it this morning for the first time. I was like, oh, shoot, I hope we just didn't get in trouble for that.
Yeah, by saying in state, it got a little specific. So yeah, maybe that, but I haven't heard of that being any kind of issue. But big news there, 4-star receiver from Louisville. We'll ask Justin Wells how big a deal that was. But that has to be a good feeling for you because there's been a lot of negative recruiting stuff to talk about with guys decommitting, guys flipping, and all that. This was a positive piece of news. Obviously, offensive side, you know, a guy that thinks he'll be utilized based on what he saw this week.
I think optics are a big deal here. I'm not totally sure about the kid one way or the other. I hadn't heard of him before yesterday, and to be perfectly honest, I haven't watched any highlights or anything, but the fact that you are getting somebody who is considered a top-flight receiving prospect in this state on Sark's first full day on the job, yeah, that's cool. Let's do it.
All right, so Trey, you and I are both, well, we're Dallas fans in some ways. You are a Rangers fan. You used to be a Mavericks fan, but you've denounced the NBA.
NBA's stupid.
I am a Cowboys fan. I'm a Dallas area kid. You were Dallas proper growing up. I was just outside of Dallas, and I root for all those teams. Therefore, I do not root for Houston teams. You don't root for Houston teams, correct?
No, I used to root for Houston teams. The Oilers were my favorite football team.
That's
growing
right
up before Bud Adams ripped all of our hearts out.
So,
and I rooted for the Rockets back in the 1990s and the Astros, too, for that matter. But ultimately, my allegiance started to lean more heavily towards the Metroplex.
So as much as we don't root for those teams, I don't think we ever wish this kind of mess on any team. What the Rockets and Texans are dealing with right now is just absolutely crazy, distracting, drama. And we'll start with the Texans because one of their best ever, I heard Aaron say this today, it's probably fair, if you think J.J. Watt is the most popular Texan that's ever existed, mm-hmm. Andre Johnson's probably second. Mm. It's in that discussion. I mean, Andre Johnson is in the discussion of like top four or five guys ever in terms of fan popularity, just loving the guy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm putting J.J. Watt at number one, but Andre Johnson, you could make a solid argument for him at two or three.
Andre Johnson tweeted out his thoughts on the Deshaun Watson situation by saying, quote, "If I'm Watson, I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers since Jack Easterby." Now we're calling names. "Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic," with three exclamation points. So, to sum up, I don't think Andre Johnson's on that committee anymore, and I don't think he's got a key to the building anymore if he had one.
Probably not.
Wow. And then the added little ingredient is DeAndre Hopkins, obviously former Texan, now Arizona Cardinal. He tweets out, "When Dre speak, listen." So just an added ingredient there from a guy that obviously wasn't a fan of Bill O'Brien's by the end of his time and ends up away from Houston.
There are some people who are just not good judges of character when it comes to hiring people into positions within your company, and maybe that's what Cal McNair is right now.
Yeah,
like he obviously wasn't the guy who hired Bill O'Brien to begin with, but he's who allowed Bill O'Brien to continue to do his thing for a lot longer than he probably should have. And now he has bestowed that responsibility on Jack Easterby, who's running an organization in a manner that it really reeks of nepotism right now, doesn't it?
In a way, it does. Yeah, it's so bizarre. It just feels gross right now. Rod Babers, who's on the Triple Option, our afternoon drive show, is a Texans fan, a Houston guy, and he has started referring to Jack Easterby as Littlefinger for you Game of Thrones fans for the way he's orchestrating this thing. It just feels so bizarre with how everything is being played out. And now, did you hear yesterday while you were dealing with everything in your day off? Did you catch the update on the Eric Bieniemy thing when it comes to Houston?
Yeah, they're giving him like some sort of sympathy interview now.
Yeah, but the thing is, now they can't do it till after their season's over. They had the week last week that was open when other teams got their Zoom interviews.
Oh.
They can't have it now.
Huh.
Now it's closed off, and you can't talk to them until their season's done. And they may go all the way through, obviously, to the Super Bowl.
I hope that costs them whoever it is that they are truly targeting for their next head coach.
It may.
Well, yeah. But then again, I don't want them to luck into Bieniemy either. I don't know what I hope for that franchise right now. Hopefully Cal McNair decides to hand it off to somebody else before it's too long.
I can't imagine Bieniemy is going to take them very seriously, but we will see. That's going on in Houston. There are trade discussions, not actual trade discussions for the team, but there's stories out there about, well, where could Deshaun Watson end up and where would it go? And, you know, could he end up in Miami and trade him for Tua or whatever? All that's going on with the Texans. And then the expected drama with the Rockets is happening. We talked about this. If you're willing to let James Harden and Russell Westbrook be on your team when they don't want to be, they're going to make it difficult. Russell's now gone. He got out. He got his way and got out. James Harden has now gone four straight games, scoring less than 20 points. He hasn't done that since he was a sixth man in Oklahoma City. And after the game last night, he sat there and he moped and he said, oh, it's tough and it's frustrating and I just don't think it can be fixed. And then he stood up and walked out.
This is so much more enjoyable with James Harden being fat, too. Isn't it?
Some have noted that he might not be in optimal peak condition.
If he got super skinny before this, it would be one thing. But the fact that he just decided to go total fat guy on the situation, I just love it.
Golly, it is so crazy. Now, again, I feel worse for the Texans right now than I do for the Rockets because the Rockets had to know this is what was going to happen. You had to.
Yeah.
Right?
He wanted out before the season.
He didn't
have long to do it, and you probably couldn't get a good deal, but you needed to make something happen there.
What is that old saying? In fact, I think they made this a focus of a You're the Worst episode. We're both fans of that show. You knew it was a snake when you picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's kind of what it is. If you're shocked in the front office of the Rockets that this happened, I would invite you to go to really look into what's going on here because you know that's who James Harden is. Mm-hmm. And you knew he was going to wreck this thing, and now he's doing it right in front of your face. So the disregard for his teammates, the COVID protocol breaks that just show he didn't care about the team, and now he's going through this. And not saying he's purposely scoring less than 20 points, but he's just kind of, I don't know. I'll admit, I haven't watched every bit of the games to know if he's just, you know, jaking it or something, but that's not good.
Look, he's not the first superstar to try and force himself out of a situation. We saw it with Anthony Davis within the last couple of years, right? But it's very rare in the NBA that the superstar doesn't get his way. And perhaps this is part of the reason why right now. And yeah. The NBA over every other league has empowered their players more in terms of what they're able to accomplish, especially if they decide to go this route.
Yeah, and it's probably too much. I mean, it's probably gone.
James Harden?
No, overall. The power for the players swung too far.
It does need to swing back towards the middle a little bit more, much like the NFL is on the opposite end of that spectrum. The players need a little bit more power in that league. Unfortunately, they continue to negotiate CBAs that seem to do the opposite. So I don't know what to do about the NFL. But the NBA, yeah, the players need a little bit less power, and perhaps that's part of what's happening here too. Is the league behind closed doors saying, look, this guy's trying to force his way out of a situation. You can eventually trade him, but don't feel obligated to do so if there's not a deal in front of you that you're willing to take. Like, we heard about the 76ers potentially willing to acquire James Harden, but they would have had to include Ben Simmons in any package.
Ugh.
And they didn't want to do that.
No.
And I don't blame them, but I also don't blame the Rockets for not just giving him up at that point.
Yeah, I don't know who wants James Harden at this point, because you've watched what it does to a team. You've watched what it forces you to do basketball-wise, and you are not guaranteed that the other end is a championship.
There's a team that is really good defensively right now who needs to figure some things out on offense. He could be good in that regard.
Who could
be that number one scoring option. I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were speaking of a specific
team. I don't know. I'm just thinking of a situation where he might fit, because even though we're seeing things play out in a less than ideal manner for Rockets fans right now, and probably for James Harden and his agent too, we also know that he has been a good teammate in the past.
Yeah, there've been some guys that like playing with him.
He's been the leader of a team that was theoretically an injury and a game away from making it to the NBA Finals a couple of years ago. He is still a top-flight scorer, one of the best in the history of this league.
Yep, they got to figure out a way to get him happy and get him out of town, apparently, as far as the Rockets go. So that's what's going on with the Texans and Rockets. I don't see any issues going on with the Astros today, so I guess that's good news if you're a Houston fan. All right, coming up, we will talk to Justin Wells at 105. The recruiting news yesterday that obviously connects to Steve Sarkisian and then his first press conference. What did Justin think of that? Up next in the press conference, we almost got to the end. And then somebody decided to ask about that Texas A&M game. We'll play you Sark's answer and what happens now on the Horn. Feel like I should know this. You staying with ELO?
Yep.
All right. Which one's this?
Living Thing.
Living Thing. All right. There you go. Some ELO for you today.
Never heard this song before.
Yeah, this one I've heard. Right there, that part. You haven't heard that one? It's a living thing. You've heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing to
Yep.
Yeah. All right, shout out to ELO today. Also, shout out to all of you that may or may not be Cowboys fans. You still got to be proud if you're a Cowboys fan, and you might want to, you know, get some gear too. Register at hornfm.com to win a $100 gift card to the Cowboys online store, courtesy of the good folks at Miller Lite, the official beer of the Dallas Cowboys. Visit the contest page at hornfm.com to win. Got to be 21 or older to do that. Cowboys getting ready for life with Dan Quinn as the defensive coordinator. We'll see how that works out. All right, let's get into the crap bag, and we'll talk some Sark.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations. It is 255-8678, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. Trey, do we have the incredibly long, drawn-out answer that Steve Sarkisian had for this A&M thing. Man, this takes a while. Get comfortable, because he goes on and on and on into the press conference. He almost got out of there. But then Ed Clements, the legend. Man's been around a while, old school football guy. He wanted to know, what about Texas and Texas A&M? Would you be interested in having that game? Here's Sark's answer.
I would love to play that game. I think it'd be great for the state of Texas. Would look forward to it.
Whoa. All right. Was that 4 seconds? Is that how long it lasts?
Something like that. 4.2.
4.2 seconds. He would love to play the game. I keep asking the media to not ask the question, but as long as these coaches are going to leave the door open, the media is going to keep asking the questions. So I can't get mad at Ed or anybody that wants to ask the question. But moving forward, it's a strange answer for Steve Sarkisian, because I don't know that Steve Sarkisian talked to anybody about the feelings about the A&M game or anything like that. In the end, Trey, what we've learned over the years is there hasn't been one head coach since the end of 2011, that actually has power in this discussion. Not one. Not one that wears orange, not one that wears maroon. They can say what they want, and pretty much to a man, they've said some version of, yeah, I'd like to play it. Yeah, it should be played. And yeah, if it made sense for us, we'd play. Like, there's been some version of those things. But in the end, the powers that be have made a decision long ago that they're not going to play. So Steve Sarkisian there is, it's weird. I'm glad he just went 4 seconds. He's sort of, I mean, those are his feelings.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't say he lied about anything. It's just from the university's perspective, they probably heard him say that and just dismissed it totally. Like, oh, that's cute, but no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, what more needs to be said right there also?
Yeah.
I think that's he put that as succinctly as anybody could. Yeah, I want to see the game played again. Next.
He said it'd be good for the state,
yeah,
which I think I would also agree with. Whether you're on the Longhorn side of that discussion or the Aggie side of that discussion, to me, there's my simple answer right now would be, in a perfect world, of course they would play. In this world, they never should, ever again, because there's only two things that could happen. Either if Texas and Texas A&M get a whole lot better at football, maybe. Or if Alabama and Oklahoma get a whole lot worse, maybe. But they each have a crimson problem, and playing each other does not help your crimson problem. Trey, your Longhorns have got to figure out how to go to Dallas and win that game to give you an advantage, to give you a cushion for the rest of the season, so that you might, even if you slipped after that, you'd have the tiebreaker, which gets you to the game for sure, et cetera, et cetera, and then you get to the playoff. What do my Aggies need to do? Well, my Aggies are in the division with Alabama. They have to figure out a way to beat Alabama. Scheduling Texas doesn't help them do that. Not any more than scheduling A&M would help you beat Oklahoma. Again, in the flowery little world that football fans like me live in, I don't wake up every day thinking of national titles and playoff appearances and all that kind of stuff. Of course, I want them to play, but I'm a kook. The actual, if that's your idea, if you're paying Jimbo all that money to get him to a playoff and you're going to pay Steve Sarkisian because you want to go to a playoff, do not schedule that game. And somebody needs to finally answer the question, we've got enough to deal with. Maybe one day it would make sense, but we have enough to deal with already. If I were those two teams, I'd call them out. I'd say, we have an Oklahoma problem, we have an Alabama problem, and until we solve that problem, there is nothing else that needs to be talked about. Period.
Yeah, the reason to play more difficult games on your schedule is if you are one of those fringe teams who could be right there on the precipice, but other blue bloods have an argument over you and getting in. And for Texas, there are less of those teams than there are for A&M right now. Is that a fair statement to say?
Right, yeah. But for A&M, they have the most clear, obvious blue blood in their way.
They do.
That if they beat them, it gives them an amazing amount of clout in that particular year.
But there's also an argument to be made that if they have other tough games on the schedule, that it does boost their argument in a year like this year, where they did lose big to Alabama, but they took care of business in every other spot on their schedule. And if they had, say, a Texas on the schedule, and they had an impressive win in that game too, it boosts their argument that much more. But ultimately, both teams are doing a pretty good job of having that tough non-conference opponent to go along with whatever the SEC or Big 12 is dishing out on a given year. So it's not necessary.
Yeah.
But like you, maybe it's because I'm also a glutton for punishment. I would like to see this game return sooner rather than later. We can accept that it's probably not going to happen this decade unless it's in a bowl game or a college football playoff scenario. Boy, would that be fun. But hopefully they can get something on the books in the early to mid-2030s.
And the weird thing to me is clearly neither side wants to admit they want to play, but it's weird that neither side will admit they don't. That's what's strange to me. Like, just admit it if you don't want to play the game. Like, Texas will always have, at least right now, Texas has the ability to say, well, we asked, and A&M said no. Now, as you know, I believe that was not done in good faith at all, but at least they can say it. They can say, we asked the question. A&M said no. They're, you know, it's kind of like, aha, you see, we tried. But then no one's tried a thing after that.
Well, I think the Texas side does want to play the game. There might be some people that don't, but I think a majority of the Texas side does want to play the game. And I think a majority of the A&M side does want to play the game too. But if there's anybody...
You're talking about like student body and fans and that
talking
crew?
About people in administration also. On the Texas side, on the A&M side, there have been administration people that have come out and said, we don't want nor do we need this game going forward. And so that's the big holdup right now.
On the administrative side of things.
On the administrative side, yeah, the decision-making side.
I believe ultimately that's going to be the opinion both sides. It's like, you know, if, and because, you know, Texas asked A&M in a situation, I think they asked a question they knew the answer to. And then they never asked again. Like, if I asked you to dinner last night and you said, man, I'm going to see Chappelle, and then I never ask you to dinner again, well, did I really want to go to dinner with you? Like, if I was Texas, I'd keep asking. And A&M keeps saying no, and you keep telling everybody, well, we tried for, like, right now there'd be a game in 2034.
Well, what's...
If either side really wanted it,
well, what is,
it would be on the board.
What is an acceptable amount of time to put in between asking to put that other opponent on the schedule? Is it once a year as you're reconfiguring things or as you're determining what you're going to do in the future? Because I don't know if that's just a once a year process. I mean, those conversations are always happening.
You're saying, do you want to do like one home and home, a couple home and homes, or make it permanent?
Yeah,
like, there's a lot of area.
If I was Texas and I really wanted this game to come back, I would offer the opportunity to A&M and say, we'll even let you guys choose whether you want to go home first or second.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go home first, great. Let's go home. You go home first, and then you visit us here in Austin the next year.
Yeah, I think, again, with the system that's set up right now, I think it's football suicide. I think it's football suicide either way.
It's football suicide if you already have another non-conference opponent on the schedule. Otherwise, it is beneficial.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm so glad that Texas schedules those games. They shouldn't, though. They should get rid of all of them. Texas is in a position to be a big dog and get to the playoff. They should not be scheduling USC, Alabama, and teams like that that could get in their way.
I think that if the college football playoff expands to 6 or 8.
Oh, well, yeah, then we can talk.
And perhaps that's part of the reason why they have scheduled so far out, and they do have the likes of Bama, Ohio State, Michigan, mm-hmm. Georgia, Florida on the schedule, is in anticipation of the playoff expanding to where all of a sudden those games actually do matter a little bit more.
The ultimate thing would be if you finally declare that the winners of all 5 of the conference championship games are in the playoff, well, then the Longhorns and Aggies need to stumble their way immediately to the table and then have the game, because then it won't matter. Then you play the game because it needs to happen, and it will not affect your ability to get to the playoff.
True.
That'd be perfect. Then all you're fighting for is bragging rights, state of Texas stuff, and who the recruits are yelling about. Then it's perfect. But we're not getting there.
Right.
We're not getting there anytime soon, because nobody on that CFP committee wants to be gutsy enough to say that this Oklahoma team or this Oregon team actually belonged in a playoff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to go that far.
Yep.
They don't even want to talk about Cincinnati. They were undefeated.
That's right.
So they're not going to, yeah, they're not expanding that idea. So I get why Texas and Texas A&M wouldn't get together. But that is why, or excuse me, that is what Steve Sarkisian had to say about it yesterday. Officially, the Texas position from the new head coach is he would like to play the game, and it's good for the state of Texas. Obviously, there was no follow-up after that as to what it means now. Maybe that comes later. All right, coming up, Justin Wells of Inside Texas. The recruiting news yesterday that Sark produced with a national championship, that momentum, plus the press conference and what Justin thought of it. It's all coming up on The Horn.